from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. How you doing?
Well, about that, I debated something this morning. I debated taking off today.
Why?
And here's why. I woke up this morning doing my usual reading the news at like 5:15, 5:30 this morning. I'm checking all of the news. And I said to myself, self, you should probably take off. And I said to myself, why? Because you've had enough. And Ursula, I have had enough. The news that I have been seeing, my take, is going to be non-filtered today. So I'm going to ask you, are you prepared for how I'm going to be today on this show?
My stress level has just gone up. That's what I'm prepared for now.
I am zero filtered out. I am tired of being sick and tired. And maybe as we get through this, maybe I'll calm down. But I got to tell you, I'm in rare form today.
I'm making a break for the door, by the way. If you need me, Ursula, I'll be out there.
I'm in rare form today. Love you too. Love you back. So let's get to it, Ursula. Don't be nervous. Let's just get to it. Ursula's top five news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
Well, I'm going to start off with some reassuring news for drivers. Okay. The State Patrol has now arrested two men suspected of throwing rocks off overpasses and onto highways in Seattle.
We're happy that we're able to start making arrests. And through coordinating with Seattle Police, our aircraft, and the extra troopers through the area, I think it's a good plan, and I think we're making progress, obviously.
Trooper Rick Johnson says early yesterday the State Patrol arrested a man throwing rocks onto I-5 near the convention center in Seattle. And then on Sunday morning, State Patrol troopers and SPD arrested a guy who was seen throwing rocks over I-90 while riding a bike and wearing a headlamp. So far this year, there have been close to 80 reports of these kinds of incidents happening along the same stretch of I-5 and I-90 in Seattle. And I just got off the phone with the spokesman for the King County Prosecutor's Office, Casey McNerthney, because I wanted to know if we could find out anything about these two suspects, G, and any possible motives. So I just got some court documents in my hand. The guy who was seen throwing rocks while riding his bike with the headlamp, so he's been charged with several crimes in the past, and he has also had a long criminal history dating back to 2004.
I thought you were make me feel better.
No. I know. Well, no. Well, I'm going to give you facts. So yeah. So it's, my job today is not to make you feel better. My job is we're going to discuss, and then we're going to have a really good show. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you're going to feel good. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a good show. Okay, so this guy failed to appear in court on three different occasions. He's been charged with several crimes in the past, including second-degree burglary and malicious mischief in September. But a bench warrant was not issued after any of those missed appearances, I'm told, and that's because judges were following a state Supreme Court order and subsequent orders in response to COVID. So that's not the prosecutor's office dealing with that. That's based on a Supreme Court ruling. So you know that a lot of justice has not happened in this past year and a half because of court operations being shut down, et cetera. But this guy, and State Patrol wants to be real clear, they're not thinking that we're done. So they're telling you, don't let your guard down. Unfortunately, they're assuming, and we should assume, that there are more people out there. But looking at this, because there's a lot of speculation as to who was doing these things.
Right.
And this particular person, this suspect, claimed that he was in the Morrison Hotel, which is right across the road. Morrison Hotel, which has been well documented, is basically a place that's somewhat out of control. And a lot of homeless are there, and a lot of people with drug addictions and mental health issues, et cetera, et cetera. So he is claiming that he had run into that building a few minutes before he was hotel staff had told troopers that he had run into the building a few minutes before he was caught and he was trying to hide. So that's the little bits. I'm just literally putting this together in the last minute. But that is the last of the minute information. Do you feel any better knowing that two people have been arrested?
No, I don't. I don't feel better because I want to hear and see the charges. Attempted murder, right? And what I mean by that is, hear me. No. I'm telling you what it should be. Can somebody die from you throwing big old rocks and boulders onto the freeway? That's people don't like me doing a yes or no, but this is a yes or no question. If the answer is yes, if there's anybody that says, yep, they can die, then it should be attempted murder. And see, here's my problem. You see, when it comes to this, Ursula, what is going to prevent people from doing this again? Is it going to be you just arrested for throwing rocks? Because I got kids out here in the past that just thrown rocks and they just get a little slap on the wrist. So here again, we are talking about repeat offenders, people that just do whatever they want to do day in and day out. And then we notice how the crimes escalate. It's not like, oh, you know what? Second degree burglary here, not showing up for court there, no bench warrants because of COVID. You know, I'm going to take that opportunity to be like, ooh, lesson learned. No, that's not what's happening. What's happening is we got people right now that are deciding, you know what? There is just free reign. We could do whatever we want. So let's just start throwing rocks on I-5. What's the penalty? So you ask me specifically, do I feel better about the rest? Okay. Yes. I'm glad they found someone. Now, going forward, I want to see what the charges are, because based on the charges will let me know if we are going to keep continuing to see this reoccur. And so I just want it to stop like everyone else. And if it's not going to stop, I would like to see. So, hey, why is there traffic on I-5? Oh, because they're building a structure so nobody can throw rocks on the freeway.
You make many great points. I will point out, though, that anyone who works, whether it's in the prosecutor's office or an attorney, you know that you have to charge based on what you can prove. So you can say attempted murder because someone could have died, but are you going to be able to prove that in court? And do you go for the hardest charge that you can prove, or just the hardest, you know, the biggest charge, and then potentially face, okay, overcharging, this is overreach, it's not, and then you have nothing. So that's one thing. I just want to make sure that that's clear, that because I would look at it and say, why isn't it attempted murder? I think it is. I mean, someone actually did get injured and could have been killed.
Right.
But it doesn't work that way. But what needs to happen is This is someone who does have a long criminal past. This is someone who may be living in that Morrison Hotel, which, again, there's documented issues there. Not trying to malign people who are homeless or who have mental health issues, but we got to look at, like you said, look at the whole system. Couldn't do anything about him not showing up, which is another reason, you know, we talk about bail and how high should bail be. Now, in this particular case, for this particular arrest, he is being held on $100,000 bail, and it was not lowered. But that leads me to our next story. New questions are being raised about the man who told police that he had killed another homeless man at that encampment in the park next to the King County Courthouse. It turns out that Michael Sedejo had been accused of attacking another man at City Hall Park. But as Como TV's Matt Markovich reports, he was released from jail after a bail reform group paid off the money.
Court documents say Michael Sedejo admitted to police shortly after his arrest that he stabbed Bradley Arabe to death following a 10-minute fight, telling his victim, just lay there, you're going to die, rendering no assistance after stabbing him in the chest, allegedly telling police he had no remorse for his actions and only God could judge him.
And he throws me on the ground.
In April, police arrested Sedejo after he allegedly beat up Richard Weisgerber at the park, who had also been homeless, too.
He's punching me in the eye, and even though he's punching me in the eye, a second guy came up, and between the two of them, they stole my camera.
Then days later, Sedejo allegedly beat Weisberger's legs with a stick when he tried to get his camera back.
I wanted Matt to join us because he does such a great job reporting on these issues. So for this murder, prosecutors had asked for Sedejo to remain in jail with bail set at $50,000, but a King County District Court judge dropped his bail to $20,000. And in the first incident for robbery and assault, a different judge reduced his bail to $5,000. And the next day, on May 6th, Northwest Community Bail Fund, which is a nonprofit organization, posted that $5,000 cash bail, and then Sedejo was released from jail. So let me repeat that. This nonprofit group posts the money for him. He gets out, and then short while later, now he's accused of murder.
What happened to us encouraging and being there for good people? You know, Ursula, it kind of feels like the people that are doing the right thing, that wake up every day, that decide not to go and do bad things, that are good to their neighbors in their community, good with each other, no matter what side of politics that they're on, no matter what color of their skin. It just seems like these folks right there, if you commit a crime, you go and do something, you're going to be in trouble. But some of these same folks, we keep talking about stories. And every time, Ursula, you give us some stories, you always give us some facts about how this person is a repeat offender. How long are we going to keep doing this? How long are we going to just keep just allowing people to just get out here and do what they want to do? Beating up people in the legs, just beating up folks and they're getting out here and getting out there. I'm trying to, Ursula, figure out how long we're going to do this.
Yeah, I'm going to go real specific on here. So in both cases, the judges dropped bail. In the first case, it was dropped low enough so that this group, thinking they're doing a good thing, because they say they advocate for bail reform and they cover bail expenses for poor people who would otherwise spend pretrial time in jail. This guy is homeless. He is bail should be used, you know, like, are you a flight risk? So, you know, already he's accused of a violent crime. He's living in an encampment. There's no proof that he's going to be able to show up or no one was going to hold him accountable. And you want to bail him out? I mean, you know, maybe that you have good intentions, but now we're dealing with a guy who's accused of murder. Same guy.
Wow.
So, you know, you talk about bail reform. I think bail reform in many ways, in some cases, needs to be to the point where people aren't released so easily.
Right. I guess to sum it up before you move on to the next story is this. This is just a feeling that I get. Okay, I'm not putting this on anybody else. I'm just selling on me. I feel like I'm watching as a kid, I watched a lot of superhero movies. You know what I mean? I watched a lot of Batman and Superman and stuff like that. And I feel like Lex Luthor and his people are getting to roam free and do whatever they want to. And it feels like the good people, the good folks in the world, is just like we have to sit by and sit back and just watch all of this continue to happen. And I don't know what's going to have to happen, Ursula, but this is going to have to definitely reverse.
Yeah, and we're talking about criminal justice reform. It feels like we just always go to the extremes. Now, you know, we're too punitive, so now we're going to go swing all the way to the other side, and now we're going to just let everyone go free. No. I mean, and you've got to look at each fact of the case and say, someone who does not have a permanent home is a flight risk. Someone who already has assault on their background is a flight risk. Why are you wanting to let those people out? It makes zero sense. Amazon is now denying a report in the Seattle Times that says the company uses a controversial management practice that's similar to stack ranking, where employees are graded in comparison to their coworkers instead of performance goals. So essentially, think about it this way. Remember when you would get graded on a curve in college?
Right.
That's
right.
Kind of what it's like, supposedly. So the newspaper looked at internal documents that show that Amazon systematically pushes out 6% of its office workers. And these documents reveal that Amazon also expects more than a third of their employees who are on these improvement plans to fail. But I want to again say that Microsoft is saying, no, we don't use that. Those are outdated, what they're looking at. But others who have looked into it are saying, BS, it absolutely is very similar. This is something that CEO Jack Welch from the GE days in the early 2000s, he was known for this, the stack ranking system, but it was abandoned in the early 2000s.
Ursula, doesn't every company have some sort of way of doing this? You know, sometimes you hire a consultant to come in and help your company be able to thrive. And what's the first thing they do? Well, they come in and say, well, first of all, your expense is here. We need to get rid of that. And why are you paying for this? Oh, and let's look at your employees. Let's look at what they're doing. I mean, that's just kind of how it goes, whether it's in radio. And one of the greatest forms, Ursula, of seeing this is through sports. The Seattle Seahawks are the way that they are today because guess what? Every couple years, what are they doing? They are looking for the next best, if you will, employee. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I thought that's what everybody did.
I mean, even if you don't call it a stack ranking system or grading on a curve, the problem with this is that you could have 10 amazing employees, but the one who is amazing but not as amazing as the rest would get ditched anyway. Because of this supposed stank ranking where they're just always going to kind of go for the next best thing, go for the next best thing. And even though you're doing great and you're meeting your performance standards or whatever it is, you're just not as good as the other ones. And what that could generate is this toxic workplace. Mm-hmm. And that's what critics say, that it harms innovation. Microsoft used to use it, and they got rid of it in 2013. But I'm with you. I think every company has, you know, whether you articulate it or not, your bosses know where you stand in terms of how valuable you are to the company and how hard they're going to fight for you.
Well, Ursula,
I mean, there's just no way around it.
Real quick, yeah. I know I give our bosses a hard time, but yeah. If they come to you and be like, hey, Ursula, we're thinking about getting rid of G, can you stand up for me?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
and bosses, if you're listening, you deserve every hard time I give you. Anyways.
Okay. We spent a lot of time. We're actually on number four right now. Okay. But I want to point out that we did tie the record high for the Seattle area yesterday, topping off at 89 degrees. It's going to be cooler the next couple of days, but climbing back to the 90s this weekend. I want to ask you real quick, how are you holding up with this heat?
Hot and sweaty.
But you said that you feel like you're missing out.
I'm gonna say something to people and see if you guys can relate to this. Right now, today, working makes me feel like I did as a kid in the summertime, that I had to go to vacation Bible school while all my friends was hanging out kicking it. Now, somebody listening right now really felt that. If you've been to vacation Bible school, there was nothing about vacation that was attached to that Bible school.
I remember I used to have Saturday school. Yep. Assumption. Okay. Hey, I want to do something, though, because I want to remind everybody, we talk about the drownings, we talked about the dangers of water, but I also want to just remind everybody, it is warm, and make sure that you drink enough water, etc. Because yesterday I was at the pool, and a gentleman looked like he had not had enough water and had probably been in the sun too long and was kind of in and out of it and really was not responsive to his wife. And the one of the managers was able to, you know, try to keep him cooled down, put ice on him and cold towels. And the 911 was called and Engine 22 came out, the crew for Engine 22. And I just watched. I was sitting in the pool and watched, you know, after I helped get some Gatorade and tried to stay out of the way. But so appreciative of Seattle Fire Department, Engine 22. The crew came in, took care of him. And I just felt really good. I had to say, you know, from the pool, I'm like, thank you for what you do. And we just don't know, thank them enough. And I'm sure that they're going to be really busy now in the next couple of days with a lot of people.
You should have
kind of dealing with the heat.
Ursula, you should have started off today's top five with the good news. And in that way, I'd have settled down right away, because that is an amazing story. Shout out to the fire. Who? Which station?
Engine 22.
Engine 22?
Yeah.
Holla at you.
Yeah, I'm the woman who was at the pool with the glasses going, thank you. Okay, still ahead. Third Avenue in downtown Seattle has been plagued with drugs, crime, and homeless tents, but it looks a lot different today. Seattle City Councilman Andrew Lewis is going to join us next to talk about the program that he thinks will finally make a dent in the homeless crisis. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show, Tuesday morning edition. if you drive down 3rd Avenue in downtown Seattle this morning, it will probably look very different from the last time you saw it. The streets clean, the homeless tents are gone, and the 33 people who had been living in them have voluntarily gone into shelters. It is the work of the Just Care program, which Seattle City Councilmember Andrew Lewis believes is the model that will bring downtown Seattle back to its glory days. And Councilman Lewis joins us now. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. So if you could briefly, because we don't have a ton of time, if you could briefly explain this Just Care program and how this is different from what we've done in the past.
Yeah, well, you know, fundamentally, it's a team effort. It brings together resources from the county, from the city, and it wasn't just the Just Care social workers down there, which is a consortium of a number of different providers, including Evergreen Treatment Services, Chief Seattle Club, the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, Asian Counseling Referral Service. We also had folks down there from our City Hope team. You know, we had the full leadership and support of Mayor Durkin and her folks. And, 14 of those folks got into placements in, tiny houses and enhanced shelters through the Hope team. And then the other half, about 15, 17 people, got in through hotels that the Just Care program is operating. And by working together, we were able to solve for everybody, avoid displacement, and get people inside and get those businesses on 3rd Avenue in a position where they can open again. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Councilman Lewis, why now? Why hasn't this been happening the past few years?
Yeah, when I got onto the council in January of 2020, I said that this is the way that I was going to try to lead and bringing people together, making sure we were embracing the politics of collaboration instead of conflict and looking at how we could use our resources more efficiently and effectively. And, I've been one of the most impatient people in City Hall on this. And I'm thrilled that we've gotten it together here in time for what looks to be at the end of this month, the reopening of downtown and the ability to start getting tourists downtown, getting people to reopen businesses, giving confidence and safety to the residents that live downtown, both housed and unhoused. And, it took a while to get everything rolling. But once you really sit down with people and start talking about our mutual interests, as business owners, as service providers, that we all have the same goal, which is to get folks inside, things can gel pretty quickly. And I'm just glad that they did.
I got to just jump in because you said you're one of the most impatient people on the city council. The city has lost its patience. People who would normally even advocate for the homeless, and we don't blame the homeless, it's just this inactivity. And just for me, as someone who lives in Seattle, and I have talked on the show about, there was a homeless camp. I saw it grow. I saw it explode in the past year and a half. Olga Park, right across from my mom's house. And it took a murder before something happened. It was finally shut down. And now we have a City Hall Park encampment. Now we're talking about a murder there as well. And I love what happened on 3rd Avenue. But people are tired. What is going to happen to City Hall Park and everything else? Now that we've started this, can we just systematically go through the city and do the same thing?
That's my goal. We passed legislation as a council that I believe is going to be signed by the mayor in short order here to put more resources into scaling this approach that we saw on 3rd Avenue to really lean into it and to really keep moving because we need to be able to see this kind of change, as you just indicated, all across the city. I share the impatience of my neighbors who have been seeing what's been happening because it's been to the detriment of the livability of everyone in the city. Be it housed, unhoused, small business owner, you name it. You go down the list. People shouldn't be expected to tolerate this. This is just not a way that we should be. This isn't the Seattle that we want to see. So, I think that what happened on 3rd Avenue is scalable. I think we can do it in more places.
City Hall Park be next? I mean, that there now has been a murder there and several other well-documented crimes, not to mention the crimes that are happening as people...
No,
it's right by you guys.
Very, very high priority for my office. Like part of how these things come together is it's not any one entity, right? I mean, like, you know, the division of powers, the city council doesn't actually direct city departments on what they can and can't do. That's an executive function. So,
a
lot of the hard work that we do on the council really goes into facilitating these partnerships, like bringing together the city and Just Care to pool resources to do things like we did on Third Avenue. I think that we can have a similar collaboration with Courthouse Park, but we got to make sure that we go out and really see what everyone can bring to the table. Because I think part of the problem has been when we're all siloed and we expect, you know, just the city to do it or just the county to do it, there's not always enough resource to get the job done. But when we can pull it together and say, look, you know, the city has 14 spaces here, the county has 15 spaces here, you know, you can start adding it up and you can do a big removal like the one that we did on Third Avenue. So we have a lot coming down the pipeline here with the ARPA bill that the mayor is going to be signing today, the American Recovery Bill that the mayor is going to be signing. And I'll be at that signing later this afternoon. And that's going to kick off a lot of programming specifically designed for Courthouse Park for the intervention we all want to see there.
First, we only got 1 minute, council member. But first, let me just say this before my last question. I got a lot of respect for you to come on our show. That's number one. I really appreciate you. And no matter what, whatever the differences are, I appreciate somebody coming on to actually talk and answer these questions. So I want to say that first. The next thing I want to just say is this. You hear it. You hear the frustration. You hear the frustration of it feels as if the people aren't being heard. It feels like a lot of people from the city council are just kind of doing their own thing. I'm not saying you. I'm just telling you what the conversations are and what people are getting. One, the last question for you is this. What do you what is your last and final message that you have for the people that are just frustrated and feel like they are not being heard?
Yeah, I would say email my office, andrew.lewis@seattle.gov, and let's harness all of that frustration and energy into a big collective effort and movement to get the job done. Because I think that that's really what we need to see. I mean, we need to see a moment here of citizen activism, of citizen involvement, where we really come together and make this a moment in Seattle history where, faced with these big and great challenges, we came together and we resolved them together. And I think that's what's been missing. I think that there's been a lot of folks that are trying to tear us apart, that are trying to put us into different corners, that are trying to divide, and that hasn't gotten us anywhere. You know, we're almost 6 years into a state of emergency on homelessness. The problem continues to grow. And we have here a model that is paying dividends, and we should be leaning into it, and we can all do it together. And then when we solve it, we can all look back on it as a community and talk about that time we came together and we resolved one of the biggest crises the city has seen in modern times.
Councilmember, I respect you for saying that, and I know we're out of time, but I got to say, some of the most divisive is coming from the council itself. And so I love that you have stepped forward, and it looks like this program does look really good, but do you even have the backing of your own council?
Hey, you know, our bill to lean into Just Care passed unanimously. And, you know, this is a movement that we've built that has united Rachel Smith, the Chamber of Commerce CEO, with Councilmember Shama Sawant. So, you know, when good ideas come down the pipeline, you can bring polar opposites together to get the job done. And I think that's really the power of this model.
Well, it looks like it worked for that stretch of Third Avenue, and people, you know, who were living there have now gone into shelter, and we can only hope that that continues before there are more crimes. Andrew Lewis, council member, we really appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next, and we need to talk. Have you ever had the debate on which restaurant is better, Red Lobster or the Olive Garden? We get to the bottom of that next. It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Hope you are enjoying this good sun. And make sure that if you're thirsty, So might your children and your pets might be thirsty, too. So don't forget about that. 10:06.
We got texters, and it was a great reminder after I shared that story about the guy who got dehydrated. It's like, yeah, your pets, too.
Yeah. Make sure. Vito's good. Vito went outside this morning, played a little bit. You know, I noticed he's a little thirsty these days. But right now we need to talk. And Ursula, I had an epiphany. So what happened was, is the Olive Garden Red Lobster debate came up. And the thing is about that is this. For years, I've told everybody that Red Lobster is the best. It's the best. Them Cheddar Bay biscuits is the best. And I noticed something. I always go to the Cheddar Bay biscuits as my end all be all. The problem is this. Everything else that comes through Red Lobster, like especially in the Pacific Northwest, right? When you start talking about seafood, right?
Mom loves Red Lobster.
So do I. So did I. But I'm from Chicago. And in Chicago, we're not big seafood people. But in the Pacific Northwest, where the fish is right out the water, fresh to go, and you're going to get something frozen from somewhere else, this is why Olive Garden reigns supreme. At least those breadsticks and that unlimited salad to go on with that Alfredo sauce on the pasta is excellent. I'm going with Olive Garden over Red Lobster.
This was your epiphany. I need to roll it back a little bit. Where is this debate happening?
Is it a
Twitter debate? What is this? Well, it
was on Twitter for a little bit, but this came to some amongst my friends.
I think it's a marketing ploy. Let's create this. What's better, Dunkin' or Krispy Kreme? Dunkin' has Charlie DeMello. You know, it's trying to be, and then you make it a social media thing, and then now we're talking about it, and they get free advertising. Okay, go ahead.
Great. You're putting in facts. And what do I tell you about facts and details?
I know. Don't let it get in the way of a good story.
So anyways, so where are you at on this? You said your mama, and your mama probably listened, and she loves Red Lobster.
If there's a choice to go someplace, she loves it. She loves the all-you-can-eat shrimp or whenever it's the all-you-can-eat seafood. She loves their seafood. Mm-hmm. I think their whole menu is good. It's big. Yeah. And same with, I'm just not a big pasta person. So I can see where if you love pasta, Olive Garden's your thing. Great. I like the unique neighborhood restaurants. That's what
I
love.
My buddy was so in this conversation, the same buddy that took off work. They were at Olive Garden recently. And they were like, man, where's our breadsticks? You know, it was taking a long time because usually, you know, the breadsticks be hot, ready with the salad and everything while you're waiting for your food. I'm like, man, where's the breadsticks? So the server said, hey, sorry. What's happening is with all of the, you know, the DoorDash and Uber Eats and all of that, they are taking the breadsticks. And so they got to hurry up and go and grab them to be able to get them to the table because of the DoorDash orders and stuff. The breadsticks are going fast.
Somehow DoorDash, Uber Eats, they always get back into the mix.
That's where we at today, Ursula. That's where we at with the conversation.
The eating experience at restaurants, although it's coming back. And like I said, when I was in Vegas, I really enjoyed it. But so often you see way more people doing the DoorDash and getting the delivery versus just going out and enjoying a meal. And I still love that going out part.
Somebody said, 425 says, Olive Garden is the Waffle House of Italian food. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
If you tell me you want good Italian food and you want to go to Olive Garden.
Okay. Before we go, I just want to let you know that Sizzler is still reign supreme. Love them. Coming up next, three things that you need to know. It is the G and Ursula Show.